The Business Bubble.
Hello, guys, and welcome back to another episode of The Business Bubble, the podcast or video series where basically I run through my life. You know, I tell you guys about what's happening with me, trying to become a business person, trying to get something out of life and make something out of myself. Oh, I'm not getting that very much. And that's basically what's happening. But today, this is a special episode because I really wanted to cover this. This is the video where I'm going to try to give you guys my perspective and what I took away from a video from Ray Dalio. Ray Dalio is the founder and of the investment firm Bridgewater Associates, and it's one of the largest hedge funds. So he knows a lot about economics and investing and finance, and I really look up to him a lot. He is very wise, and a lot of the things he says make a lot of sense. You know, he's a very simple kind of guy in that sense. He explains things well, and he made a video. I don't know if it was him. I mean, he basically narrated how the economy works. It's actually the video. It's called "How the Economic Machine Works." It's an amazing video. I 100% recommend you guys go look at into it and really, you know, look for yourselves just how it works. But in this video, I'm going to give you guys my perspective on how I watched the whole thing and how I basically processed the information and what I gotta kind of transmit to somebody who doesn't know. Okay, so now I'm going to start with this. The basic thing that I really want you guys to take away from this, I think like the best thing is that, you know, sometimes we look at the economy as something super big and complex and boring that really doesn't have to do a lot with us, but it has so much to do with us, and it has to do with everyday life things. Okay. What I really wanted to say is that the economy is alive, and this is why. Because the economy's building block is the transaction. What is a transaction? It's basically I selling something to somebody else, that other person is giving me money or giving me credit. And we're going to be talking about credit in this video. So what happens there? Well, it's just a exchange of goods for money or credit. That's basically a transaction. And that is the building block of the whole economy. This is because you buy and you sell things that have to do with a market. So, for example, if you buy and sell a lot of cars, you are participating in the car market, right? In the, well, the automotive market, automobile market. And if you, you know, sell a lot of financial assets, you're pretty much maybe in the stock market, maybe, you know, it depends on the market, depends on what you're selling, what you're buying, but you're participating with transactions, and that's what makes up an economy. And you always have to participate because you have to live. You know, people have, since the beginning of time, have to be exchanging goods and services for things of value or for other goods and services, you know, like but way back in primitive times. Now, why is it a living thing? Well, it's a living thing because it's composed of something that changes. Now, that's my definition, of course. It changes a lot because, imagine this, transactions are to an economy as cells are to an animal. You know, they're built of it, and depending on how the cell behaves, the animal will behave differently. You know, if all the cells are in a horrible, deplorable state, the animal's probably going to die. That's basically what happens with the economy as well. Now, this is very important because sometimes we don't see this as the truth, but it has a lot of truth in it, in the sense that in those transactions, the most important part is the spending, okay? Spending drives the economy. And why is that? Well, it's very easy because if I have a lot of money and I just use it for myself and I don't, you know, I buy as low as possible, I don't buy from everybody else, then they won't receive money so that they can buy from somebody else, you know? So the cycle is cut, like the whole circle is cut, and you know, bad things start to happen. The same happens if you spend all of your money and other people don't do that. Well, you're going to be, you know, like stuck up. It's basically like a chain. It's an interesting chain that works together. That's how I saw this whole thing. Now, the thing here is that spending drives the economy because my spending is another person's income. Think about it. What if, you know, I was in the car, again, the automobile industry, then I would be buying a lot of cars, right? So all of that money that I buy, you know, the car from, let's say the manufacturer, that manufacturer is getting that money and that is his income. And he's going to use that to buy stuff from somebody else to make the cars. So maybe, you know, steel factory or whatever, that money that he spent, that he bought steel with, right? That is the steel company's income. So spending drives the economy. That's very interesting. That's very important for you to understand. The second thing here is that there are three templates, that you can basically plot out how the economy moves. So the three templates of change, of how the economy changes, of it moves, are the productivity line or productivity growth, short-term debt cycle, and long-term debt cycle. Okay, we're going to start with the basics. The productivity line. It looks just like a, you know, linear line going up. And why is that? Well, it's easy because, and it's always going to be somehow that way, because it depends on productivity. If you're productive with what you do, then you will get more income and you will, you know, eventually rise with the economy. Your economy will rise. Just as that car manufacturer gives, you know, great cars and great value from the cars, they are being productive. They are producing and they're innovating and therefore they're getting money. That's their income. So, you know, the more productivity you have, the more income and the better your economy would be. Now, that's very simple and basic, but the economy does not work like that. Of course, we have a lot of recessions and depressions and inflations and things like that. What is all that? How is all that happening? Well, it's very easy. It's because, remember, a buyer and a seller can exchange goods and services for money and credit. And credit, it's the most important thing probably in the economy, and it's often the least understood. So what is credit? Well, credit is the promise of paying you in the future with interest. And what is interest? Interest is basically an additional sum of money from the principal that you guys agreed on. So, I mean, I guess you guys would pretty much know what interest is, but just in case. So credit is that. Credit is very tricky because once you create the credit, you know, and somebody, you know, lends you money, you have to pay it back. And that is called a debt. So what is that? Credit is an asset to the lender. And it is a liability to the borrower. That's me. So it's a good thing for him and it's a bad thing for me because I got to pay it back with more. But the thing here is that I get the money that I didn't have before so that I can buy stuff so that I can be more productive. That's the basic and the most fundamental thing for somebody to understand, you know? Of course, sometimes and most of the times people don't don't get that credit in order to buy something to be more productive and go up in life. They usually buy, I don't know, maybe like TVs or whatever the heck, that does not really produce a lot of income later on. But if you use that credit wisely, you can buy, for example, new machinery that'll make your company more productive and that'll give you more income, which you can therefore use to pay that credit or your debt, basically. So, you know, that thing, that credit is what drives the economy, like up and down, okay? that's what credit creates cycles. Credit really creates cycles because well, in the video it says cycles, but I would like to see them as waves. Because when you get the credit, you are essentially getting to spend more right now with the promise that in the future you're going to pay for that and more. What does that mean? It creates a wave. Right now, I get more money and I can spend more money. But then that means that later on, I have to pay it back, which means that I can't spend that much money. You know, so it basically creates like a wave like that, like up and down. Here you borrowed a lot of money, you have a lot of money, but you know, in the future, you basically lock the future. You basically now can make a prediction that you 100% have to pay that, and you will 100% need to spend less in the future. So you borrow a lot, and here in the future, you know you got to spend less. That's why I like to see them as waves. And, well, why do we borrow? Because of a better life, of course. So it really makes sense, you know, it really makes sense for that cycle or those waves to happen. So maybe to get into the other two templates that I told you about, the short-term debt cycle and the long-term debt cycle, now it's easier to get into them because they happen because of credit. So what is the short-term debt cycle? The short-term debt cycle is basically when it happens every 6 to 8 years, approximately. And that's why, you know, every sort of like 6 to 8 years on average, we have like problems in the economy. You know, it happened in 2000. It happened in 2008. It'll probably happen soon. You know, you see the pattern. So what happened here is that in the short-term debt cycle, what you would do is basically that. You know, a lot of people get a lot of loans. They got a lot of borrowed money, so they can spend a lot. But later on, you know, they can't spend that much. So what happens there? How do they realize that they can't keep on getting more money from a lender? Well, easy, because there is a thing called the central bank. And the central bank controls the interest rates at which other banks can lend you money. So remember the interest rate? If there's low interest rate, meaning that you just have to pay a little bit more from the thing that you got lent, then a lot of people are going to be willing to borrow more money. But if the interest rates are really high, then you won't want to borrow money because you're going to have to pay a lot of money later on. And it doesn't make a lot of sense. You're deterred from borrowing money. So what what happens in that cycle? Basically, when you borrow a lot, the interest rates are very low, right? So you borrow a lot of people borrow. And right here, you know, a lot of people have a lot of debt. So what happens is that people have debt. And second of all, people spend a lot of things. People think spend a lot of money. When they spend a lot of money, they make inflation happen. What is inflation? Well, inflation is basically when things have a lot. Things are really, really expensive. Why does that happen? Because we have a lot of money. And because we have a lot of money, we buy a lot of stuff. And we buy a lot of stuff. What does that mean? That means that for one thing, you're spending more for that one thing. You get it? Maybe not? Well, whatever. The thing is that inflation happens there. And then the bank raises up the interest rates. You stop borrowing money. You start paying off the debt and stop spending. And then when, you know, basically debt is control and everything, you go put the interest rates low again. That's what happens. That's the short-term debt cycle. It lasts 6 to 8 years, as I told you. And later on, what happens with the long-term debt cycle? Well, the long-term debt cycle is basically the same, but in the larger scale, because people push it, as Ray Dalio says. What happens? Well, what happens is that people usually have the inclination of getting more money borrowed than they can actually pay back. So it'll eventually come down on them. Because we saw that when you borrow, you create a wave. You create a point in the future. You lock the future. You create a point in the future where you have to pay that back. You're locking the future. Therefore, if they have short-term debt cycles over and over again, but each time you get to borrow a little bit more, then it'll resemble as a wave going up like that, like little waves going up and up and up and up. Eventually, that debt is going to just destroy you, come down on you, and is going to tumble you. And when I say you, I mean the economy. At which point, it's going to be like, you know, a small deflation and recession. Oh, by the way, when it goes up, it's called an expansion. And when it goes down, call it a recession in a short-term debt cycle. But what happens here is that the expansions have been bigger than the recessions, right? So what happens? It happens that when you're at the peak of the long-term debt cycle, there's a thing called deleveraging. Deleveraging happens when all that debt tumbles over you and you have to pay all of that. The economy goes down. Why? Because since you have a lot of debt to repay, you can't spend that much. And because you can't spend that much, people can't get more money as income, and they can't repay that debt, which, you know, it creates a cycle. It creates a cycle where I don't spend, somebody else doesn't earn, somebody else doesn't pay their debt. Therefore, they spend less. Therefore, somebody else doesn't get paid and somebody else can't spend more. And, you know, it creates that vicious cycle and painful cycle. It goes down, and that's when you get a depression. A depression happens, and usually a lot of things happen with it. Social reforms usually take place at this point. A lot of people's assets and financial assets and values and things, they don't really have the value that they thought they had because they have to sell stuff. And when you sell a lot of stuff, prices go down. And why do you have to sell stuff? Because you got to pay for your debt. You got to pay for your debt. You got to pay for your, you know, everyday things. And you're squeezed. Everybody gets squeezed. Even the prices get squeezed. So prices go really, really low. That's distinctive of a depression. The asset values that you already had, that you thought were valued at a higher price, are actually not that much. It's actually a lower price. So what do you do with a depression? You can't really, you know, lower the interest rates so that people can borrow more, you know, and continue on with the economy, because interest rates are already at zero. They are already at zero, and people are just trying to pay off the debt. So the problem here is the debt. What do you do with the debt? Well, there are four ways of dealing with it. Number one is less spending. And as we saw, that doesn't work because my spending is somebody else's income, meaning that if I spend less, somebody else is not going to be able to spend and pay off their debt. And it just creates a more horrible scenery. The second way is debt restructuring. Now, this is a little better because debt restructuring means that my debt gets cut or gets restructured in a way that is easier for me to pay back or faster. I don't know. Maybe lower interest rates, maybe longer time spans. But it really doesn't solve the problem that much because when you have lower debt, people still have lower income because of the whole thing. Remember, everybody's spending less because they have to keep paying the debt. I mean, it helps, but it's not the whole thing. Redistribution of wealth is the third thing. Now, the third thing here is that redistribution of wealth means socialism, essentially. The wealthy give to the poor. And why does that happen? Well, because the wealthy have more money. They are able to live with, you know, they're able to live. If you take away some of their money, they're going to be okay. So you take away some of that money and you give it to the poor. I don't agree with that because I'm a right-leaning dude, but whatever. That's one of the approaches that have actually happened and have happened here in Costa Rica. Alfredo González Flores made that, and that's why he's in the $5,000 bill, 5,000 colones bill. So that's another thing, but it doesn't really, you know, get the whole problem solved. However, the fourth one, printing money, is stimulatory for the economy because when you print more money and you got more money circling around, then yes, I mean, the standard of living is going to be a little, you know, like up. That's why, you know, dollar right now is not a thing. A dollar back then is nothing compared to a dollar right now, right? So, or the other way. Basically, a dollar back in the day could buy you a bunch of things and now it can't. Well, that happens because of this, basically. You know, you level up. So when you print more money, you got more money around, you help people to pay off their past debts and, you know, continue on with their lives. So if you balance those four ways in a way that it can not tumble the economy one way or another, but, you know, sort of like try to get them all in unison, you create a beautiful deleveraging. And when you create a beautiful deleveraging, yeah, you just make it as smooth as possible, and you get it back up. And when you get it back up, the whole cycle continues again. People start becoming more credit worthy, and people get more borrowed money, and they, you know, produce more, and blah 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 blah. The whole thing repeats itself. It's a cycle. That's why it's called a cycle. But the wave, you know, it's a big wave. So that's basically it. I don't think I explained myself that well. Sorry, guys. But really look into the video. I 100% recommend it. It's really clear. It helps you to see things more clearly and to digest a confusing and complex subject such as the economy into really simple terms that you can understand and you can see in everyday life. So I really recommend that for you guys, for everybody. Thank you for listening. This has been the Business Bubble. Take care. Bye-bye.